Detroit has a sound. It's why it's called Detroit Rock City. And for the next hour, 101 WRIF is digging deep into that sound. This is Motor City Riffs with Screamin' Scott and Chuck Bean.
Welcome, everyone, to the second episode of the Motor City Riffs podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Bean. Every Sunday night at 9 p.m., I join Screamin' Scott, and we give you an hour of bands from right here in the Motor City and the surrounding areas. Try and give you some new favorite bands. With the podcast, we just choose one band, and we hang out with them in the studio. We get to know them. We dig deep into the history and where they're going of the band. Yeah, these guys are looking real worried about this. Today, we're talking to the band Hillbilly Knife Fight. I've got 5/6 of the band, from what I understand. I've got the bass player John over here on my left, Jerkweed on the vocals, Number 9 on the trumpet over here, Benny on the baritone sax, and then Nick on the drums. Fellas, how's it going?
Great, man.
Good.
Going.
Everybody's like, do you want to say it? Who talks?
Right.
So,
who goes first?
So, let's start at the beginning. The band name, Hillbilly Knife Fight, where'd that come from? Whose fault is that?
That fault is mine.
Okay. Why is the band called Hillbilly Knife Fight?
Why? Because I like to have all of our bands that we've been in, like our band before this was Dirty Mitten Funk Band. We were more of a funk band.
Sure.
The band I was in way back was the Juan Valdez Love Machine. So
that's a
kind of come
name.
Up with these big crazy names.
You're a killer on band names, man.
Pool of the names, you know.
Right. Do you have like a piece of paper someplace? Like when you get a band name, you're like, oh, I got to write that down.
We actually used to have a fake MySpace page where we had the influences for like some fake band, and it was just a whole giant
list of bands that don't
exist.
And
this was one of the names on the list, actually.
Nice. You guys were an influence before you even a band.
Right, yeah,
So
I had to go back to the list and pick something out.
So where does Hillbilly Knife Fight start? Like what year did you guys all get together and be like, this is what we're going to do?
8 years, I think. Eight years. Would have been our 7th beer tent, so 8 years ago.
Okay.
It's a tangled web.
Yeah,
different bands meshing together over the last decade.
Well, yeah. See, like we started about 8 years ago. We had a different bass player, and he played with us for about three, and then he left, and then we got John, and then he was also a songwriter. Bill, our guitar player, is our main songwriter, and John at the time was. Well, he wrote those songs. Obviously, he wanted to take his songs, so we kind of restarted, and so this band is what we've been for probably 5 to 6 years. Like
with
currently.
John,
what? Yeah, Hillbilly 2.04. Yeah.
Oh, is it 4 or 5? Okay, maybe my timeline.
And then. Everybody in this room except for John was in Dirty Mitten Funk Band.
Sure.
And when that dissolved,
that defunct,
we were kind of like, we want to do something more, but we want to go heavy this time, but keep the horns. And
okay.
So that's,
well, that leads into my next question. For those of you who haven't heard Hillbilly Knife Fight before, and you will, trust me, we got a couple songs to play for you here. How would you describe what you guys do musically?
Everybody wants to take this one.
because
we don't want to have a description. We kind of want to be our own.
Absolutely
fringe.
Fair. No, to me, from what I've listened to of you guys, your two records that you have out, it's not quite metal, but it's definitely heavy. It's heavy rock.
I go with that.
With horns.
I go with that.
And then we say that to people, and they go, "Oh, it's Scott." No, it's not Scott at all.
Right? Yeah. No. There's
not
no.
Yet.
There's
we
no upstroking on the guitars or anything.
Right.
But.
Right. It's angry, aggressive guitars.
Right.
Angry, aggressive vocals. But
what was the decision making process as far as like, hey, we're gonna have a heavy band, but we're gonna have a horn section?
Well, Dirty Mitten Funk before that wasn't so heavy. And when we started the new band, we were in it.
But we had the horn section.
We had the horn section anyway. Right. So we started the new band. We wanted it to be heavier, but the horns were already in it. So we just had to figure out a way to keep
the
us
initial
fascinating.
The initial founding members were actually us three.
Okay.
And it becomes very difficult to start a band with two
I was in there.
You were there for
but
a
then
minute.
You
the very beginning.
But then,
the beginning.
But then he left.
And then he left. Right. And we ended up going through several member changes for like a year or two where we never actually did anything. So yes, you were there. Yes.
Yeah.
For like
when it was in my basement.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
So it started with the horn section. So was it the horn section that was like, we want to try something different?
It was all of us.
It was Joe mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just said, I don't, because in Dirty Mitten Funk, we had
Joe
two
is Jerkweed, by the way.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
You can call me Joe.
They rapped in it. And I remember you saying, I don't want to rap anymore. and I want to be heavier. And that's when us four got together from Dirty Mint and Funk, and we tried out guitar players and bass players, and things were going really slow. And then I had another opportunity to go to another band, so I left them. And they were stuck looking for not only a bass player, guitar player, now a drummer.
Now a drummer as well.
So I stayed with this band for a year. That dissolved. And then when it dissolved, I called them back. And they're like, no, we're still looking for a drummer.
Ooh.
And I had a bass player from the band I was just in. So I'm like, well, I can bring a bass player too. And by then they had found a guitar player. And it was kind of set from there.
Sure.
And
speaking of the guitar player, Bill, who's not here, he was the piece. He was... is Benny and I had this idea, we talk about it a lot, like we want this crunchy guitar when we just not finding anybody that's hitting it. And then his girlfriend was like, hey, what about Bill? And oh crap, we never thought of Bill.
Never thought of it.
and Benny knew him. And so
I was going to say, did you guys knew he played guitar?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I knew him through another friend that was also a sax player. And I kind of hung out with him, and I knew he was in bands. I'd seen him in some previous bands with friends of mine.
Right.
Didn't know if he was doing anything. And actually, at the time, I wasn't talking to that friend. We were fighting. And I'm like, I don't even know if I should call this guy, because he's going to be like, screw you.
Right. Blah, oh, blah, you're blah. The dude that said the mean thing about my buddy. I'm going to fight
and
you.
And I called him up, and he literally was just like, oh, no, man, that's cool. I don't follow in that guy's footsteps. Yeah, I ain't doing nothing. My band just broke up. Sure, what days you practicing? And it was just like, and then we got Bill, and we're like, we don't have anything. He's like, oh, I got a million riffs in my head. And he just started bringing stuff, and it just, he's our riff master, and we just started writing stuff around. He comes to the things with just a handful of stuff, and we just all collaborate and make what we make.
He was exactly the style we were looking for.
And that's kind of the cornerstone of the sound, is that it's just loud, aggressive.
Very crunchy guitar.
Yeah.
Crunchy, mean guitar. And
right.
Kind of what everything else kind of evolves around.
So, John, I'm gathering you're essentially the baby. You're the newest member.
I'm the newest guy. I'm the oldest guy and the newest guy.
You're the oldest guy, but you're also the newest member of the band. You've been in the band how long?
4 or 5 years-ish.
Yeah.
What is your story in getting to this band?
Well, I've been in bands with Nick, and we've been in bands with other shared members
for sure.
Years, known each other 30 years. And they're having what they're having problems, or I don't want to say problems, but they're parting ways with their old bass player,
sure.
Who's also a very good friend of mine. And Nick just called me up and he said, hey, you know, we're parting ways. You want to be in the band? And I'm like, yes, absolutely.
He was already coming to our shows and stuff.
Yeah, I was a fan before I was.
Oh, that's cool.
Before I was in the band.
Nice. So I asked you guys this off mic before, but what area is the band, you know, from? Like, where's everyone coming from?
We practice in Plymouth, but we're from Livonia, Redford, Westland.
You're
the only one that's like down.
I'm from Dearborn.
Sure.
Lived over here, lived on the east side. I live down in Monroe, Newport now.
Now it sounds like there's a very, don't take this word the wrong way, but a very incestuous music scene.
Yeah,
that you guys are all part of. Like, how many of you guys are in more bands than just Hillbilly Knife Fight?
Not anymore. At one point,
yeah, not at the moment.
Just me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Bill's in a couple bands.
Oh, Bill. Yeah, Bill.
Our
is
guitar the, player.
Right. Yep. He's
okay.
In multiple cover bands.
I would promote them, but I don't remember the name.
Well, Crossing
Bridges. I don't know if they do anything.
Well,
I
think he just did. You're the one that's got to deal with Bill when this comes out. So
that's right. Yeah.
It's up to you.
At the time Nick called me to join the band, I was already in two bands.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. It'll something's gonna crash and burn, but we'll figure.
Sure.
It out. And the other two bands ended up, one continued on without me, and the other band fizzled out.
So what is the how would you guys describe, like, what is the music scene like in, I'm gonna say, Plymouth? Roughly where you guys are.
There isn't one.
There isn't. Yeah.
No?
I mean, everything is literally downtown, or like we've done really well, like Diesel, which is like east side. But I mean, everything is pretty much downtown.
Yeah, most of our gigs are Detroit.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to play like out by us, except for like the Token Lounge, and that's like the one bar, and nowhere. There's no live venues out there.
I wouldn't say we were specific to any part of the Metro Detroit area.
Right.
We take run the gamut.
Yeah, we go all over.
So do you guys have like a you have a network of a couple of bands that you guys get along with really well?
Oh,
you all talk to?
Absolutely.
What are some of the bands that
we'll start with? Busby Death Chair, because we're playing with them coming up at the end of the month, October 29th.
That's right.
So they're one of our good friend bands. We love playing with them.
Yeah.
Oscar Goldman Overdrive.
Nice.
Those guys from, I guess I would say the east side, not being from the east side.
Plush
Deathly, of course, yes. Yeah, that's one of the incestuous.
Okay.
I was in Plush Deathly. I've sat in with us a few times.
Sure.
And then another friend, our friends, Failing as Humans, is another up-and-coming band that we've done a lot of work with.
So you can see, like, me and Nick are both wearing shirts of this thing. This is an event that we do up north, and there's a whole bunch of bands that, like, we all kind of play off of each other and play at that show. And like,
nice.
We've kind of created our own community, and then because of that, it's expanded, and that's how we met, like, Oscar Goldman. And then, you know, so it's... We kind of started our own thing, and the circle just gets a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. So it's really nice, you know what I mean?
It's always cool to hear in any particular music scene when like bands get along and like help each other out instead of having that competition of like, we're going to blow you off the stage. We're going to be the best goddamn band at every show kind of thing. It's like, no, man. Like, if
more
we
of a camaraderie for sure.
Yeah. With a lot of if we do a show and there's an open spot, then I've got some numbers to call.
It doesn't mean that's not happening underneath in my head.
Sure.
I'm going to do that. But.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You want to put on a good show.
On stage, I want to play real well competition, but not the thing where it's like, I really don't like these guys' competition. It's like, no, exactly. I want this, you know, because that's the thing. It's a show. You want the whole thing to be, you know, it's not just a series of, you want it to be a whole event for people, you know? They took their time, they spent their money, they drove down, so you want it to be a whole event for people, so you want all the bands to do good and be good. And
absolutely.
You know what I mean? You don't want to go up there and have anybody crap the bed so you can point at them and go, ha,
no,
ha,
absolutely
ha,
not. Right. I want to be friends with everybody and I want
absolutely.
To have good shows.
And we have. I mean, we've done amazing just meeting people and networking with all the guys, you know, so it's been great, you know.
Excellent, excellent. So what you said, you play a lot in the metro area. You mentioned like the Token Lounge and you know, some downtown areas. What's some of the biggest, have you done any, like, opening for any national acts?
No,
I mean, I don't
touring acts, but national touring.
Hey, we just played St. Andrews Hall.
Yeah, we did play.
That's a big deal.
We opened up for Downtown Brown. They did their final show at St. Andrews Hall, so we got to play that with Carmella Birdie, who's a good friend.
Oh, she's amazing. I love her. Yeah,
and
she's great. She's
Coffin Cats.
She's a friend of a friend.
Coffin Cats were on that gig too.
Yeah,
so that was a great show. It was a great opportunity for us to play the big room. You know, St. Andrews Hall.
For sure. Is St. Andrews basically like one of the biggest gigs you guys have had so far?
That's the biggest room I've played. Ben has played there a few times.
Yeah, I've played a lot of big
rooms. He plays at Downtown Brown as well when they do Detroit shows.
We played the Masonic Temple one year.
We played
Theater Bazaar 2019.
COVID.
It was a good gig.
Yeah. What was that like?
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I imagine you had to be well received. Because Theater Bazaar is just it's like everything goes kind of thing. It's a heavy band with a horn section. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, we were on kind of early on one of the upstairs stages, but we had a pretty good reception.
Yeah.
Oh, but the stage we were on was perfect for us.
It was like playing in the third ring of hell.
Pentagram and flames and things. 5-foot-tall
Baphomet statues. Yeah, it was awesome.
It's
dude.
A good room.
Demon girls dancing in cages. It was pretty awesome.
So, Joe, you mentioned, and I want to make sure to mention this a couple of times, that you guys have a gig coming up as of this recording, Saturday, October 29th, mm-hmm. Parts and Labor. You guys are going to be playing with A Day at the Station, Mr. Clit and the Pink Cigarettes.
Yep.
I'm really glad they haven't sent me anything to put on the air, because I don't think I could say that.
They're out in Indianapolis. They're a lot of fun.
Oh, good. Busby Death Chair and, of course, Hillbilly Knife Fight. Guys, we're going to take a short break. When we get back in, I want to talk about your studio work. I want to talk about some of the songwriting stuff. And the first song we're going to play for you guys is Another Death in Texas. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners about this before they give it a listen?
It's the second time we recorded this song, hence Another Death in Texas.
All right.
No, I don't know if I have anything.
It's a staple live. It's one of the first songs I think you guys ever wrote.
Yeah,
it's one of the first songs.
I don't like to boast about anything, but I'm very proud of my solo in that one.
Yeah,
that's one of the ones I get to go and I'm like, hey, this is me. If they've never heard me, so I'm so happy about it.
That's out in the baritone sax.
Yeah, actually, the first time I recorded, I did it on tenor, and then when I came back, I decided on this album, I'm only gonna do Barry, because that's how we are live, trumpet and Barry. And so I just said, I'm going to convert the solo, and I transposed it, and I'm very thrilled with it. So
I'm going to try and limit the amount of questions I have about your horn section, because I know nothing about playing horns.
He'll teach you everything. That's right.
All right, let's go into break. We'll be back after this. This is Hillbilly Knife Fight with Another Death in Texas on Motor City Riffs.
Send your stuff to Chuck and Scream It at mcr@wrif.com. You bring the noise, and we'll find a place for it on Motor City Riffs.
Welcome back to the Motor City Riffs podcast, our second episode with the band Hillbilly Knife Fight. You just heard the song Another Death in Texas. And before we went into it, Joe, you were saying this is the second time you've recorded Death in Texas, hence it being Another Death in Texas. The first version is on your 2019 record, what is it, Burning a Hole in the Sky? Yeah. And then you guys did it again, what, like 3 years later for the new record? Why re-record it?
If you ask me, I don't know.
You're like, it was perfect the first time. It doesn't matter.
No, they're different. I like it. I think that song is one of Bill, one of his babies.
Yeah.
And his brother recorded our second album. So I think he wanted it reimagined in his brother's getting his guitar sound how he wanted.
Now, was there any fiddling by anybody in the band knowing that you were going to do it a second time? Was there anything it's like, oh, I can do that part better? No, I'm getting a lot of like, nah.
I think I tightened up and practiced more because the horn line's a little, it's a little speedy. So I think the first time I went in, I was in there fighting it for a while. So I think, you know, I went in more prepared, but I don't think it changed anything really much.
For me on bass, when we recorded the first album, I only had been in the band for like a year.
Okay.
Not even that, like 6 months. So I had just learned a lot of these songs.
Yeah.
So this time I did take a little more time to like put my own.
You felt a little bit more comfortable.
My own little 2 cents into it. Right. Maybe, but that was about
That's
it.
A song we play it almost every show.
It's a great song. That's why I wanted to start with it.
And so because of that, yeah, I mean, it's just basically the same both times because we just pound it out.
Bash that out live.
You think, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, we should do something different with it just to screw with people.
Dance remix.
I didn't mean to start a problem here.
No, that's
not a problem.
It's ideas. We always like to.
We love ideas.
Right. So as I said, you guys have recorded two different albums. The one in 2019, Hellbound and Down. Is that the one in 2019? I got that right?
The first one.
First round was Burning a Hole in the Sky in 2019. Tell me a little bit about putting that one together. What was that process like?
It took a long time. That's for
sure.
A
long time.
Yeah, it took a long time. It was
just, how long is a long time?
A year, maybe?
Really?
No, a year is just, well, no, it's longer than a year.
It's longer than a year. Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, John here. We do everything on our own. And that was recorded in a basement in Ypsilanti. So.
Okay.
You know, we took our time when we had time to get in and actually get some work done. And then there was many remixes.
So is that happy with it. Is that recorded in essentially the practice space?
No.
Okay.
No, so our friend Adam Wilkinson, he recorded that, the first one.
Yeah, Wilkinson Media. Yep. He does recording and sound and video.
And he was just a matter of like piecing out time when you
could. Time, our time.
For sure.
Six guys in a band try to get any one person nailed down or nailed down for sure.
I can understand why there's so many two-person bands nowadays because it's very easy to just make sure the other guy will be at practice.
Right.
Well, that's what takes so long for us because everybody, oh, did you guys do your horn parts yet? You got to go in and record your horn parts. And
right.
Oh, well, we got to wait for John to go do his bass part first. And, you know.
Okay, so.
And then I'm the most antsy because I'm like last. So I'm just sitting there waiting. Right. Like, come on, guys.
That was something I wanted to ask because I said earlier that I know I've never been in a band with a horn section. So I know nothing about this. But I have been in bands and I have been in the recording studio. And in my experience, you get the drums first. And then you get the bass and the guitars. And then you get the vocals. And you know, sweet, where do the horns fall
right before the vocals?
So you get the whole song in there, and then you drop the horns in, and then the vocals are the last thing to.
Sometimes our horns can be cues too, you know, just in case you get in the studio and you get caught in the repetition. A lot of times it's like, oh, I'll wait for the line, and then I know when to come in, you know. So that helps, you know, him too,
for sure.
You know,
but there is a slight change to what you said about the basics of it with this band because they are Bill's songs, like the musically. And so he is like the master of where all the parts go. And so I think him and Nick actually went in and laid down like the ghost tracks at the beginning.
Yep. Sure.
And then it's Bill's brother, Nick, who recorded it. And so they, instead of bass, like you would think, it was guitar and drums.
Did Nick record the Burning a Hole in the Sky in 2019 or the new one?
He recorded the new one.
Hellbound and Down. Okay. No, that's fine. I wanted to clarify just to be sure. You guys record that one, and let me write this down because I want to ask you about your songwriting later. So you guys record the one in 2019, and then there's, like I said, there's like 3 years between that one and recording Hellbound and Down. What are you guys doing in that 3 years? Just playing out everywhere?
Well,
COVID was in there.
That was the COVID years.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Kind of slowed everything down for a little bit.
Yeah.
So we actually didn't, that whole time, we really didn't stop.
Okay.
We've got our practice space is actually in a storage facility.
Sure.
And
Neighbors aren't going to complain.
Yeah, and they were telling, you know, everyone stay inside, don't go out and all that.
Right.
Well, we didn't really pay attention to that. We went and we did our thing.
Well,
and
with the absence of Joe.
With the absence of Joe.
I wasn't there for probably like a year.
Yeah. Was there a reason for that?
Because I'm have heart disease and I'm diabetic.
No, that's...
And it was...
That's a perfectly acceptable reason.
Pre-vaccine, so I was not coming around.
It doesn't mean anything, but that never bit you guys in the ass, right?
No.
I would imagine you wouldn't be like, yeah, we were practicing even during COVID if like, all of us caught it kind of thing.
And we wore masks.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, for sure.
Space and there was never any thought. We were waiting for Joe to come back.
Basically. Yeah.
We knew his situation.
Yeah, we're just.
We would bring in guest singers to our
practice. Yeah, we do covers and bring in guest singers.
My brother sings in Failing as Humans, we mentioned earlier, and we'd bring him sometimes, or our buddy Jeremy from Plush Deathly.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have guest singers while Joe was out, which kept us, you know,
kept our chops
fresh. And
should've just got him, just Joe a laptop and get him on Zoom. There'll be a little delay, but it'll be fine.
All right. Well, I think at the time, actually, I was having a heart issue.
Oh, okay.
Also, so... So I wouldn't, when I came back, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to come back.
Sure.
Like the first practice I don't know if I can muster it. And well, now, that's long out the window now. But.
Now, if you don't want to talk about it, then you don't want to talk about it. And that's fine.
No, I'm fine.
But what is it like being a vocalist in a band when you do have like a medical issue like that? Like is there ways that it limits you? Is there things that you have to be aware of while you're doing it that you're like, if I feel this or I feel this, then I need to stop? Kind of thing.
No, I just hope I don't drop on the stage or something.
Good noble way to go.
Hope that.
But everyone will remember that show.
We played a show at the Blind Pig a few years ago, before COVID, and Benny and I were walking down back to my car or something to grab some equipment, and we were walking like the two blocks, and I'm like, man, I'm out of breath, and I had already had I had a triple bypass in 2007.
Okay.
So I had already knew the symptoms and the feeling. And I'm like, it's It's flaring back up.
Let me take a minute kind of thing. Yeah. Now, with that being said, there is a question I like to ask every single lead singer that I talk to, and that is, do you help load? Do you help load out and load in? Because if you don't...
I will say now that I don't, because I have like a 5-pound weight limit of what I'm allowed to lose. Mm.
I guess that lets you off.
Before that, I did.
I guess that lets you off the hook, I suppose.
He's all kinds of messed up. He's got a bad heart, bad back.
But he's got a great voice.
He's got a great voice, man. That's all we need, man.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So like I said, there's about a 3-year wait between albums. What was the... like, when were you guys starting to think, we got to go back in the studio? We got to do more stuff?
We were literally doing it the entire time.
Like, really?
The second one was like 3 years.
As soon as you got Burning a Hole in the Sky done, you were like, okay, it's time to do it again.
Yeah, we already have, because you notice there are only like 5-6 songs because we got this many written.
Yeah. Wrote in. Right.
Let's go with the next one, you know? So sure. We just start up right away. We're now ready to start another right now.
Yeah, now we're wow. We have 4 or 5 new songs that we need to record.
Nice. Excellent. So this is also, as I mentioned, I'm a little bit of a musician myself. So this is a question that I like to ask. I like to go around the room. Gear. What kind of gear do you use, and how important to your sound is it? Let's start with you, John, with your bass.
I use a Mark bass rig and Warwick basses. I played Warwick basses for 25 years. And
is there a reason?
That's
like,
the key to my, that's the tone I like and the tone that I want.
Yeah.
And the Mark, I was usually originally using big tube amps and Mesa Boogie cabinets, and they're heavy, and I'm 50. So
right.
We changed to Mark bass, which is a lot lighter, and I still get the tone that I want.
I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Nick? Is there a specific gear that you prefer that you're using?
I have a DW kit, and I love it.
Okay.
It is the Cadillac of the drums that from my Pearl Exports to all my old drums that I've bought over the years. The DW kit's been with me forever. But 9 times out of 10, I don't want to say it's that many, but a lot of times I show up to a gig and it's like everybody's sharing the same drum set.
Sure.
So there's many times where I'm sitting on somebody else's kit for a show, which is always weird because...
It's going to be set. Yeah, they're going to be set up different.
I bring my own cymbals, my own pedal.
Somebody's going to have like, you know, 5 toms instead of just, you know, 2 toms.
And over the years, I used to have 6 pieces, cymbals everywhere. I literally play on 1 hi-hat, 1 crash, 1 ride.
Yeah.
I used to play on a 4-piece. I just added another one a couple years ago.
So what's the tom situation that you like playing?
2 on top, 1 on the bottom.
2 on the top, okay.
Yeah.
Nice, excellent. Once again, I know nothing about horns, but are there a specific brand of horns that you guys are, like? I know you've talked about you prefer the baritone sax over the other one.
Well,
but is there a particular brand of horns that give you a tone that is uniquely like that's what I go for? That's what I like.
Not particularly. Okay, so like all my saxophones are from different companies.
Sure.
I kind of got
get
what
a little
was
closer to the mic
to
for me.
What's that?
Get a little closer to the mic.
Sure, no problem.
Thanks.
I kind of got what was available to me. My Barry is a Martin, and so in 2019 when we played Theater Bazaar, my horn broke, and one of the people there was a genius and figured out somebody to borrow a baritone saxophone from the last minute. And they
did they have the guy from the Lost Boys?
No, I just opened for that dude a couple months ago.
Really?
With Downtown Brown. Yeah, his name's Tim Capello.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, he did that song.
Yeah.
And but anyway, they found somebody that had that. They were like, but you have to be careful. This is like a $10,000 saxophone.
Ooh.
And so we had to like wheel it around, and they had like security follow me. So everybody stay away from my pretty saxophone. You know what I mean? And we got it back.
Turned
nice
into Gollum
safe,
from Lord of the Rings.
What's that? I'm sorry.
Turned into Gollum from Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
My precious sax.
He's dressed as him playing.
I have done that.
Before.
That was a shtick for a while. I would be Gollum, and I just had a rubber mask and a loincloth, and that was my stage thing for a while.
Nice.
No, I can't do the voice right now.
Now, what about you, Rob? You're the trumpet player.
Yeah, and I've had many different trumpets over the years, and my favorite was the Schilke, but that Schilke I had got stolen out of my house. And
are we still looking for that son of a bitch?
I sure am.
All right.
Sure am.
MCRWRAF.com. If you've seen Rob Schilke,
yep.
Give us some leads.
Whole thing was engraved. Silver trumpet, whole bell was engraved.
Oh, man.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But I've got three or four different horns at trumpets at home, and I'll just alternate them.
Yeah.
And they're all different brands. I'm not not real big on it. Back in high school, the big thing was Bach. Everyone wanted a Bach trumpet.
Sure.
But that was more like the Harley Davidson thing.
You know, yeah.
Name.
Yep.
You want the name. But as far as quality and playing, there's really no, I don't notice a difference between any of the horns I have.
Until you get to that $3,000 Schilke. Like I was going to say with saxophones, most of mine go back and forth. That $10,000 one, I'd actually prefer my $1,000 Martin over it.
Yeah.
When I played Selmer's, and Selmer's the big name in saxophone. Like those, when you play them, they are the best. Difference is, I don't have that kind of money. You
know? Oh, yeah.
You're talking like a $9,000 horn, you know? It's like, yeah, I don't have that.
Yeah, when your instrument costs as much as like a used car, then it's like, ooh, my God.
We're playing up on stage, and a lot of places we play, they're tight quarters.
I'm sure.
Right next to each other. And there's been times where Benny's turned and hit my trumpet or vice versa. Yeah.
Right.
And if I had a $10,000 horn and Benny dented it, there'd be no more Benny.
Right.
It'd be the end of Hillbilly.
Yeah.
Joe, do you have any equipment? Do you have like special mics or anything?
I got my $100 cheap bottom of the line wireless mic that does me right. It's
nice.
Worked better than more expensive ones I've had over the years.
So, excellent.
Yeah. And then I make my own mic stands and stuff, so I've got like a...
How does that work?
Joe likes props.
Yeah.
So the bass is from a... It's like wrought iron. It's from an umbrella stand.
Sure.
And I have a skull on it, and then Bill's lady friend.
Yes. I'm sure you can call her girlfriend.
Sarah. She put... she did the special effects props on it and put horns on it and stuff.
Excellent.
On the skull. And then, so then I have a big piece of pipe that I put the mic thing on the top and a skull on that. And I can put it into the bottom when I want to not hold it and pull it out and carry it around the stage instead of having a conventional microphone stand with the base that you got to move around and all
right.
that junk. And
right.
Props with skulls and demon babies.
Yeah. Oh, and the demon baby. Yeah. We have our little demon
babies
baby
at every show.
Sits nice. On the stage with the right by the horn guys.
Excellent. Well, I've got one more question I wanted to go around the table for before we get into the second song that we're going to play from you guys. And I'll start with you guys, the horn section over here with Rob and Benny. When did you start playing music? When did you, even if it's not specifically the instrument you're playing now, like when, what was the first thing you played and when did you start?
Oh, well, I played, I started on piano. And I was probably, 8, 9 years old on piano.
Okay.
But I always liked that because that was a great way to learn. You know, the sharps and flats, everything's written right out for you.
Right.
And black and white, literally. So, but then I think it was fifth grade even.
Yeah.
Yeah, fifth grade is when I chose trumpet.
Okay.
So I was playing through the fifth grade, or started at the fifth grade, and I played all the way up to my senior year, halfway through my senior year in high school. And then the band director and I didn't get eye to eye.
Sure.
And I quit band there. And then I went about probably 10, 11 years without touching the thing. Because I didn't go on to college, there was no more reason for me to play.
Sure.
And, you know, in the 90s, ska was big. I had actually a few friends that were playing ska and things like that, but I never did. But
interesting.
About 11, 12 years later, I ran into Benny again, who I went to high school with.
Yeah, so I'm assuming, because you were reminding him fifth grade, so I'm assuming you guys were in band a lot together.
Yeah, we were all through high school.
Well, you were actually a senior when I was a freshman, so we actually met in marching band, and then you graduated, you know what I mean? So yeah. So we didn't actually go to elementary. So I just remember because our school system started everybody in fifth grade, that's why. Same school system, so yeah.
What about you, John? When did you start playing?
I started playing guitar when I was about 12.
Yeah, and you started with the regular guitar, six string?
Yeah, I played guitar till I was 17, 18, then I had put myself through college and that kind of fell away.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get back into music till I was probably about 25. And then people needed bass players more than average guitar players.
It's true. It's true.
So I picked up bass and kind of did both for a while. But this band, I'm all bass in this band.
Yeah. Nick?
Well, my first drum set, my Aunt Laura bought it for me for my birthday when I was like 8. It was from Toys R Us.
I bet your parents were thrilled.
But my dad always played guitar, so there was always an acoustic guitar in the house. And I learned guitar, played guitar all the way through high school. And then in high school, everybody was a guitar player.
Yeah.
And I was always intrigued with the drums. I had a job. I bought a drum set. And I just told everybody, I'm a drummer. And all these guitar players, and I literally... I've had zero lessons. I've watched people.
Wow.
People teach me things, but I've never actually gone and taken drum lessons.
Sure.
Ever since high school, I just told people I was a drummer, and I'm sticking to it now.
Nice, nice. And what about you, Joe?
So
when did you start screaming into things?
Well, when we were about 12, 13 years old, me and my buddy, who was a guitar player in Juan Valdez Love Machine. We both got guitars and we started, we're just going to learn how to play guitar. And he picked it up much quicker than me. So I said, you know what? I'm going to be the singer then. And you play the guitar. And there we, that's how
play
we
your
went
strengths.
There. And I wasn't strong at that either, but I could scream, back then. So.
All right. Well, let's go into a second song here from Hillbilly Knife Fight. This next song we're going to play is actually off of your first album. And it's the final track on the album, Vomiting, Blood-Soaked, and Sick. Any notes for the listener before they delve into this track?
No, I mean, anything in the lyrics? I don't know what you sing there.
Finished writing this in the studio because it was like really raw.
Yeah.
We play it live a lot different than that recording.
I'd say the drums on there might not be what you do at all live. Yeah. I don't know.
This song has evolved because we kind of pulled it out to have it on the album.
We forced it because it wasn't
kind of forced finishing it, and now live. It's a completely different animal. It's like a jam song now. We break up solos
it's thicker.
I'm glad you said that because I definitely got some like stoner rock vibes.
Yeah, this song has two or three horn, four horn solos, a rap. Joe does a rap in it.
Yeah,
comes back around live. It can be 10 minutes long live some nights.
And Joe says some naughty words, so. Listener discretion is advised. We're going to come back in just a minute with more Motor City Riffs with Hillbilly Knife Fight. This is Vomiting, Blood Soaked, and Sick.
Thank you. people all ablaze from the face they swelter like a blowtorch. All you mothers are scorched while you choke on the smoke rolling down your throat. Heaven's hot, so hot, so hot, it's all fire. But it's hot like the sun, but the temperature's higher. High, so high, it can never be touched. Can't reach my level, can't make the cut. You are burning down, no fucking around. Smoke fills the room like a mushroom cloud. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Try to assume this spontaneous combustion. Like an easy bake oven, an easy bake oven. Sounds of self-destruction. So let it all bake, ignite and cremate. Cause if we don't need the water, let the motherfucker burn.
Feel like we're missing something? Let us know at mcr@wrif.com or reach out to us on Facebook at Motor City Riffs. If you've got a band, we want to hear them.
All right, there you go. I think I said it earlier, but that gives me very Queens of the Stone Age stoner rock vibes. Maybe that Caius first album, the Queens of the Stone Age. That is Blood Soaked. I just had it in front of me. What is it called again?
Vomiting,
blood-soaked,
and sick
from Hillbilly Knife Fight. But it's Chuck Bean hanging out with the guys from Hillbilly Knife Fight. I'm talking to John, Joe, Rob, Benny, and Nick. And I would be talking to Bill, but he couldn't make it. So we were talking briefly earlier about the songwriting, and you guys said that Bill is kind of like the cornerstone of how the songwriting works. And I'm curious, what is the songwriting process? What does it look like for Hillbilly Knife Fight?
Well, Bill basically brings a riff to the table.
Okay.
And it's a raw riff, and I actually he might bring two riffs and we piece them together.
Okay.
But everyone writes their own parts to it.
Okay, so Bill's
except
not
for maybe Nick.
Well, I'll ask Bill, cuz when Bill's writing a song, he has something in his head as far as a rhythm goes.
Right.
And I will ask him. I'm like, you know, open hi-hats, close hi-hats, you know, and might play a couple different things. And usually, like, within a beat or two, he's like, that's it, you know,
yeah,
stick with that. And then from there, I can just, you know, go wherever and you know, that we usually hammer down on a riff a whole bunch of times during a practice.
So a practice will be like, let's play this riff for the next 45 minutes until everybody's kind of got a part.
Yeah.
And then we'll figure out what the next part is.
And then if we don't get it as fast as Bill wants us to have it, then he'll yell at us.
I was waiting. I was like, is this going to be all nice? Or is somebody going to say it?
There can be some tension.
Oh, but, for sure.
It's all good.
It can be. That's healthy, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bill's very stickler, and he's very
And he'll come to practice with this riff that he's played 100 times.
Yeah.
He wrote it. It's his, so it's in the back of his head. So
right,
when we're all learning it and we don't get it in the third or fourth time like he wants us to, you know, we get the stink eye from him or
he's tired of playing it at half speed.
Yeah.
Luckily, that just goes for these two
guys.
It
just
because
goes for me and John.
They generally get to write their own parts,
right,
and I do all my own things.
Right.
So
right.
We don't get that.
Sometimes, and we all work on suggestions from each other too. Like,
sure,
somebody hears something, hey John, you think you could slap there and try that, or you know, and then you do a lot of the structuring because of not only your voice, but you have a pretty good idea of structuring tunes. Where you're like, I want that to double up right there and add a guitar solo. You know what I mean? So between
you
and Bill, you guys do a lot of structure. So it's all kind of based on that, but we also feed on each other and take suggestions. And me and him, I mean, obviously write off of each other all the time. You know,
yeah,
it's like sometimes when we don't know what to do, we'll literally both just sit there and improv until it's like, what's that? Go back and do that again. You know what I mean? And then we'll turn that into a line. Or sometimes somebody will just have something in their head and they're like, no, be quiet. I got it. And then you just noodle it out. And
yeah.
So there's always like a different process, I guess, in every song and every part.
It starts with Bill bringing a riff or two riffs. Like I got a chorus and I got a lyric part.
Right.
We need an intro, we need an ending. And then it just kind of
everybody
expands and builds
piece it
on
together.
That. And then Joe ultimately decides how many of these are
Verse, I think,
how many of these are the chorus.
I think
based
Joe
on his vocal structure.
Joe sometimes already has lyrics written and he'll decide, I want these lyrics to go with this riff that Bill wrote.
Oh, fascinating.
And he'll just kind of fit them in there and say, I need this riff to go a little longer so that you know, I need this to be able to fit in here before I go into my chorus part.
Right. So are there songs that you'll hear them banging out the riff and you'll be like, oh, I've got words for this.
So yeah, what I do is I'll just write things whenever, you know, they're almost more like poetry or something, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then I keep them all in a little bank. And when they're playing riffs, coming up, writing a new song, I start going, listening, looking at my stuff. Because I usually have some rhythm in my head, too, when I wrote
right.
it. And
some kind of vocal melody.
Yeah, what pastes well into this? And then I find the one that works. And sometimes I don't find one, and then I, you know.
You just have to write one on the fly?
On the fly, or no, those are the ones where it takes forever, because I'm trying, this isn't working, you know.
But yeah.
No, some of my favorites, though, are the ones where that does happen completely on the fly, where I make them up on the spot without looking at anything.
And then you have to quickly scribble them down.
Yeah, POS was like a one. I wasn't even there for it. I come to the practice and I say, yeah, we wrote a song. I was like, this is the horn part. Okay. And then I heard a lick and put it in, and it was in two practices. The song was done. Yeah. Other ones were sitting there for 6 months.
Our newest one, Slow Burn, I just had some little snippets of stuff where I couldn't put them anywhere. And I was like, I'll just throw them in this, and bam, they all worked.
So which do you prefer, Benny? Do you prefer to walk into practice and they're like, here's your part? Or do you prefer like to have to figure out your own part out?
You know what? It really doesn't matter. I've done so much with so many bands over the years. Yeah. You know, sometimes I go in and somebody has something written. Sometimes I have to make something up. Sometimes you have 3 months to figure it out. Sometimes you have to do it on the fly. I love the challenge of any of it. So
yeah.
If they show up, I do like when the song's good, obviously showing up and we're not droning on the same thing for 4 months or
right.
trying to figure out some part and it's killing me. Yeah, I love to walk in and go, I hear something and I got it. You got a part. And like I said, literally two practices. All right, we got a song. That's not generally how we write, but when we do, it feels really good.
So when it comes to the trumpet and the saxophone parts, are you guys playing essentially the same thing on two different instruments at two different keys? Or
no, we're in the same key, but we're a lot of times we harmonize. So they're not right. the exact same part.
Okay.
Just two different notes that go well together.
Like yeah, like almost like a chord. So yeah, that's what I mean. Are you guys playing like an octave apart, but the same part? Or are you essentially playing a chord?
Generally, it would be what, 1 to 2 octaves difference if I'm on the low and you're on the high. Yeah. And then and then we do harmonies. And then sometimes we'll have counterparts to each other as well.
Sure.
Like, you know, there's a few songs that I do one riff and then he actually does a completely different counter melody. Sometimes we do our own thing. Sometimes I listen to something and I go, we'll just follow the guitar, because if we don't, it's going to start getting real marching bandy. In
right.
So you have to be a little bit, I think, careful sometimes about not trying to push the horn thing too much. I'm like, we're in here and it's cool, but I don't want to be a shtick either. You know what I mean? I want it to be a legit thing, not just, you know, hey, we got this band and we threw these guys in here because it's shiny and it looks cool. You know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. And they'll do backup vocals a lot too when they're yeah. not playing.
Yeah. All the vomiting, blood soaked and sick was. Number 9,
yeah.
Vomiting.
Nice.
Pretending to vomit.
Pretending yeah. to vomit.
Yeah, we actually had one song that was before John joined the band. And it was one of those songs that our previous bass player had written. So when he left, he wanted to take that song with him.
Sure.
We wrote a totally different song later with these guys, and it was probably a year after we got it all down and together that I realized that the lyrics to this song were the same as that.
As the song that the bass player take, with you just transplanted them from one song to a new one.
Hey, they're my words.
Yeah, they were his words.
Exactly. No, absolutely.
In one of our songs now, so those words still live on.
So we were talking off mic briefly about some of our favorite bands. Is there any particular bands when you go into writing a Hillbilly Knife Fight, is there a particular band, and it could be different from everybody, but is there particular bands that you're like, we want to sound, I don't want to say you want to sound like this band, but if we can sound, if we can be as cool as this band, then we're doing all right kind of thing. Is there any bands that you kind of relate to in that fashion?
I don't know.
No, I mean, I think in the writing process, especially, you know, Bill's type of guy, he's not, you need. There's certain tunes you go, you can tell who I'm influenced by, right? You know what I mean? There's certain songs you can tell that. Well, he was feeling Clutch that day. Other ones,
sure.
He was feeling a little Slayer that day. But we never really go in saying, hey, guys, let's make a song that sounds like blah. Or, you know what I mean? Let's do something that sounds like
this particular band. If we do it, you can tell that we were influenced by it, but I don't think we ever have it mapped out ahead of time.
I guess
that makes sense.
That's clumsily how what I'm asking is what's everybody feel like your influences are?
Oh,
for this particular band.
Well,
it's hard to say. I mean,
I don't know what song it was. I don't know what song it was, but before it had a name and lyrics, we were calling it like the Clutch song. Because it sounded like a Clutch song.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was vomiting.
That was vomiting.
Oh, that was vomiting. That was the one you just heard. So,
hey, all right.
Before we had lyrics and that was even done, we literally called it the Clutch song because it had like that.
It had that groove.
Yeah. So, I mean, we are all influenced by, you know, all musicians are. So
oh, absolutely.
I don't know. We've never actually like thought of, hey, we're going to sound like this band or go in.
Well, yeah, even on your Facebook, you say like punk, metal, rock with a horn section, anything, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything we've ever liked or listened to or along the way, that's what influenced us.
Yes. Yeah.
And when we will do this, I wouldn't say like a certain group or anything like that, but when we're writing songs, we will say, all right, our last song we wrote was more of a punk song, so this time let's have a little more of a dance-ish groove to it, you know, as much as we would. but that kind of thing, or let's come with some heavy hitter.
Or like the new one with the shuffle beat.
Yeah.
Like it's got like, I mean, I'm literally playing like a country
interesting
it behind.
On, is that Slow Burn you're
Fish Fly.
Or Fish Fly.
Oh, on Fish Fly, yeah. See, these are the ones we haven't recorded yet.
They're coming.
Looking forward to it.
And then we got Slow Burn's almost a doom, like almost starts like a doom metal song.
Yeah, and then we got some like kind of Middle Eastern sound. We put like a harmonic minor scale over it, so it has a little bit of a Middle Eastern feel to it.
Nice.
So we always try to do that too. We had one song called Mexican Suicide at the end. We just try to do what we do, and then if we feel something that we can throw another little flair in, well, we haven't done that before. Throw a little flair in there, and it you know.
I'm trying to remember which song it was. Oh, it was Earth and Sky that I was listening to. That I was like, this is great. I like this a lot.
Ah, that's awesome that you say that because Bill hates that song.
Sorry, Bill.
We will never play that live ever again.
Sorry, Bill.
It's all right. It's a cool time.
Well, speaking of playing live, so, and while we're on the topic of, you know, other bands and influences and stuff like that, do you guys only play originals or you got covers?
We usually mix in a cover.
All right.
One cover show.
What covers can people, if people come to see you at this show Saturday, October 29th,
I'm gonna play
Labor.
Slayer.
What covers we looking at?
Yeah, what were we looking at?
I don't know.
You're the one who writes the set list.
So, yeah, go on.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I don't know.
That's a lot of respect.
Slayer Seasons in the Abyss is like our staple cover.
Nice.
That's the one. Lately, we've been playing Girls of Porn, Mr. Bungle.
Cool. So that's like one fun. From Metallica.
One from Metallica with the horror section.
Interesting.
It's a 10-minute song, so we have to have a long set.
But we take those first guitar solos and the horns do them.
Nice.
Of the guitars.
Well, yeah.
Benny does.
Yeah, I do. The
and that, well, he yeah, that's got to be part of the fun of like picking a cover too. Is going like, okay,
the horns in there.
What part can we give the horns?
Yeah.
And we did Cowboys from Hell for quite a while.
Yeah. A little cliche. There,
Domination.
Domination.
For a minute.
Orion
by myself. Yeah. When Joe wasn't coming to practice, we learned.
Oh,
a couple,
when I wasn't going, they.
We learned
they
a bunch of instrumentals.
Started a cover band for a minute.
We had a bunch of instrumentals, so we learned Orion, and nice. We started working on one.
I used to play with a bass player. That's how he would check the bass.
Yeah.
Every live show, he'd start playing Orion. I'm like,
I like it.
Come on, dude.
Yeah, if they had their way, we'd probably play more covers, but I don't like doing it.
We just take a cover and make it ours, though. We don't do it verbatim.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the very first record that you guys have a kick-ass version of Misery Lou on there.
That's pretty much in every show. It usually kicks off a lot of the shows.
When I saw it, it immediately clicked. It immediately made me say, like, of course they're doing Misery Lou. They got a trumpet player. It's going to be awesome. He's going to do the thing. And then, like, Matt or Bill, like, is playing electric, you know, like, distorted guitar. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is the stuff.
Yeah.
This is good. So, as we've discussed already on this podcast, you guys have been around since 2019. If somebody were to start a band now, what advice would you give them? What lessons do you feel like you've learned in the last, what, 4 years, five years?
Earplugs.
Earplugs? Earplugs is a good...
I don't know, man. I still not doing it. I probably can't hear any of you, but...
Well, that's too late now.
Yeah. Talent's one thing, but just the people you start the band with, you got to get along with all of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's camaraderie. It's important.
And you can take six of the best musicians on the planet, and if they don't get along, it ain't gonna work.
Right.
Right.
So, and I think that's why we've all gotten, you know, stayed around so long.
Is, yeah. We all enjoy going to practice every week. Even on the way here, Rob was telling me, he was like, man, I kind of wish we were practicing tonight.
Yeah.
This is cool, though. We're still a band outing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're all friends. We all hang out with you. I've known John for over 30 years. You know, Rob lives right around the corner from me. You know, we're all really close friends anyway. So, you know, getting together for practice once a week is nothing. It's just like hanging out with your buddies. And if you're going to join a band, you know, join a band with your buddies.
Yeah.
I was going to say, to circle back around to what you're talking about, the writing process and all that, I think that's like one of the things that gives us like the uniqueness is we never really set out to do anything other than, hey, guys, let's all just hang out, like get the six of us together and we'll make noises and see what happens. And it's literally just what becomes of it. You know what I mean? And I think, like you're saying, that's the most important thing is just get together with your friends and have fun, and it'll come naturally. Don't force it.
And don't be afraid to suck for a long time.
Yeah. You know
what? You got to suck before you're good.
Yeah, but persistence is the thing, man. If you're a new band and you're young, expect to suck for about 3 to 5 years. But you know what? Just keep plugging away at it and try to just get out and do it. That's the other thing. A lot of bands, they get together, they're really good, and then they never leave the jam space. They never leave the basement. Like, just go out and just push and try to get out there. And
but that's fine, too.
Yeah, that's
like,
my advice.
Honestly, at my age and where I'm at my job, I don't care if we ever leave the basement, you know? I don't care. I still have fun every week. I love playing the shows. I love having big shows. You know, the bigger ones, the better. I mean, that's part of the fun of
it,
too.
But
honestly,
enjoying yourself is more important to you.
If I never had an opportunity to play live, I would still jam with my friends.
Oh,
I would still play my drums. I would still, you know, I'd still be playing music.
So before we go, what's the future look like for Hillbilly Knife Fight? What can people, besides this show at Parts and Labor that we've been plugging all night, Saturday, October 29th, what can people look forward to in the upcoming year from Hillbilly Knife Fight?
We plan to start recording this winter, this fall, winter, spring. So best case scenario, hopefully there's something new next summer.
New music next summer? Excellent.
And show-wise, we will be out of Diesel in
November
19th.
Yep, all Punksgiving Eve.
Punksgiving.
Nice.
Our friends in Duck Butter are putting that show on. It's all punk bands.
Cool.
Yeah, and some other bands we played with before that are, I don't know, Aggro or Die was on there, and Come Out Fighting.
Okay.
We played with those guys back at the Rockery.
Yep.
Back in the day.
Okay, right on, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you guys. Thanks for coming in and doing our second Motor City Riffs podcast.
Thank you very much
for having us.
And we're looking forward to more new music from you guys in the coming year.
Awesome.
Alrighty.
Thanks. It was an honor, man.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.